Good afternoon. This is Don Brown. Welcome to Learning How to Be Present, a webinar on the number one leadership, sales, or service skill of our day. My name is Don Brown, and what you see right now below our logo of donbrown.org is a word cloud constructed of my background, just to give you a little bit on who I am. If you can generally tell something about someone by who surrounds them, and you'll see Dr. Paul Hersey, Marshall Goldsmith, McGraw-Hill, two of my mentors and my publisher. If you could see the smallest of print, you'd also have in there the kind of companies I work with and organizations I work with, from Bath and Body Works to Harley-Davidson or Budweiser, Fifth Third Bank, Sykes Enterprises, you name it, McLaren Health. And where we're going today is to take a look at probably the most important skill that people can learn, or what I should say is people can relearn, learning to be present. Let me tell you a little bit more in terms of introduction of what I do in that. If I think about what I do, it's really four things. I speak in webinars, in keynote sessions, workshops, anywhere from 45 minutes to a full day, 2 days, 3 days. But I speak, I write, I've got three books now, and as I mentioned, McGraw-Hill's my publisher. I coach individuals, and these may be practicing managers, they may be executives at different levels, but I also sell. I've got customers that I've had. AAA Michigan became my customer in 1986, and the same woman my client since 1989. So it's, in terms of the competencies I use, they are clustered around speaking, writing, coaching, and selling. But I've been asked by my kids over the years, my youngest is now 22, but I've been asked, no, what do you really do? And if you think about it, what I really do is I help people with people. For 30-plus years, that's what I do, whether it's sales, service, or leadership, or even parenting. I help people with people. It's what I love to do. And matter of fact, as you get to a point where you want to install some higher meaning or a higher calling into what you do, try that. How would you explain it to a third grader? And that, to me, really gives me the answer of I help people with people, and I love it. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for giving me the opportunity maybe to help you or to help someone that you care about. My point of view, one of the things when I'm working with people, it doesn't matter the context, like I said, parenting, selling, service, leadership. My point of view is simple truths, and that, to me, is how do I isolate something that is uncomplicated, that conforms to reality, and that is workable for the people that I work with. To me, I want to isolate it down into a simple truth. And there's quite a few of those as we get going. But the first, the simple truth that's operative today is learn to be present. We're in a world right now where people can't seem to, for themselves, be present for more than about 20 to 30 seconds at a time. And what we're trying to do is help people reconnect, help them reconnect with us, with that process. So learning to be present is the competency, because a lot of people, if I've got 100 people in the room, and people will invariably ask, if you could tell me one thing, Don, what is it? What is the one thing I should do? And my response to them is learn to be present. Learn to be with other people. Learn to be present. And for me, being present is simply being mindful. Being mindful of, if I go back to some of the simple truths that I've gotten from some of my mentors, from Paul Hersey, from Marshall Goldsmith, they are things like, Don, act on purpose. Act with purpose. And another one in terms of Marshall's is to be happy now. Not kind of going through your life on autopilot and ending up in your 60s or 70s and saying, boy, I've already had a career and I didn't do what I wanted to do. I wasn't very happy the entire time. I was always waiting till now. Well, guess what? Now it's no different. So to me, learning to be present is about being mindful. And mindfulness is nothing more than awareness and attention. Awareness of what's going on around me, being attentive to the individuals that I'm interacting with. If you think about it, when I say I'm helping people with people, when you look at sales and parenting and service and teaching, for that matter, and leadership, it all has to do with the human side, the interactions. not the functional. People don't leave jobs or get fired from jobs. Only about 1% of the time is it for functional failure or the inability to perform functionally. 99% of the time it's for their interactions with others. And so where I want to focus today is learning to be present, learning to be mindful, aware of, attentive to. Attention is nothing more than just focused awareness when it comes down to it. But being aware of and attentive to the people that you are interacting with right now. That is the simple truth for today, and that's where I'm going. And what I want to do is give you kind of the so what and now what of learning to be present. By that I mean, if nothing else, as you go through, we learn not from gaining experience. What we learn from is reflecting upon the experience we've had. So what I want to do is give you some ways that you can learn to increase the capacity, increase your frequency at being present with others. And the importance of it is not only are you going to be more effective with other people, you're going to be healthy. This is statistically correlated. You will be healthier if you can do a better job of being present. There's the concept of social desirability. You will be more liked if you can do a better job of learning to be present. That, to me, is the so what. Why is it important? Because it makes me healthier. I suffer depression, frustration, anger less if I can be present in the moment. And then the now what, and we'll hit these at the end of the webinar, but the now what is, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? And so as we go through, now the phone lines are muted because when you got a number of folks on, it's hard to have everybody's phone lines open. But you can, the chat function is being monitored, and people can bring, if you have questions, comments, observations you'd like to make, they'll be brought to me. So don't even worry about it. Go ahead and put them into the chat. They're being monitored, and we can hit them at the right spots. So what I'd like to do then is I'd like to take this idea of being present. I mentioned capacity and frequency. The way to do a better job of it is, how do I increase my capacity, meaning get better simply at being present with someone, maybe where I can move that to 60 seconds instead of 20 seconds. Or if it is where I get distracted 15 seconds in, how do I pull myself back in? That to me is capacity, getting better at being present with others. Frequency is the process of, how do I make sure I do it more often? And when I look at that, I would ask you, how many of you, think in terms of how many of you have spent 15 minutes with someone you care about with the television off? How many of you done that in the last week? How many of you done that in the last day? That's what I mean by frequency. Not the fact where I'm sitting with someone and we have the television on the whole time, but where I'm sitting with someone, television's off, or maybe where we go for a walk together. That's a freebie right up front that's not even in there. Is I'll give you, when people will ask during Feed Forward and some other activities we do to help generate ideas, they'll ask me, how do I do a better job? What's a good tip for being present? And I'll say, take someone for a walk. Go for a walk with them. Because usually when you do go for walks, you end up being isolated enough, as long as you got your ringer off on your phone, let's put it that way. But you end up taking a walk as an easy one. That's what I mean by increasing your capacity. And in frequency, how often do you take a walk together? Once a week? Once a month? Once and ever? That's where we're going. And what I want to do is I'm going to give you my best tips and techniques that I wrote a book called Bring Out the Best in Every Employee. And included in there are all kinds of tips in terms of, and depth on them, on how do you get better at it. So what I want to do today is, we've got about 40 more minutes or so. Let's take the time and talk through some of these. Like I said, send on chat any questions that you have as we get going. So as we look at it, learn to be present, 20 strategies to make the most of every leading moment. And to me, leading, anytime you're influencing someone else, you're in a leadership role. Doesn't matter if they report to you at work. Doesn't matter if they're your kids. Doesn't matter if you teach, sell, serve. Anytime you influence, you're leading. So learning to be present. The first tip I have, it says activate your five senses of sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. what we have is we have, this to me is probably the most powerful tip you can exercise, in that we have two circuits in our brain. One is an active circuit and one is a narrative circuit. Active circuit is when you are immediately engaged in taking data from one of your senses. It might be that chill in the air. It might be you look up to the bright sunshine. It's pulling in data from your senses. You are present at that moment. But when you feel that chill in the air, and then you start to look off and you see that there's 6 or 8 inches of snow, and you start thinking, oh, God, I've got to shovel the snow when I get home. Now I'm onto my narrative circuit within my brain. I'm no longer taking in data. So it works the other way around. Even if I am in a narrative mode where my brain is not taking in data from my senses, and if I want to do a better job of being present, well, then if you draw in air, if you look up and notice with intent the color of the lighting, if you rub your hand on the surface of the chair of the desk, now you're engaging your senses. That's, to me, the first and probably the most powerful way to bring yourself into the present. Do something. I mean, you ever hear the expression when somebody says, oh, pinch me, I'm not sure I'm awake? Well, I'll tell you what, somebody pinches you, it'll bring you into the present. That sense of touch will, a bad or a powerfully good odor. You walk into the house in the evening and all of a sudden you smell that food that is oh so delicious. You are in the moment. You are in the present. Engage one of those. Learn to engage your senses purposefully, with purpose. Learn to engage those with purpose. That's the first tip. Second tip I've got, it says approach those you interact with. Approach those you interact with. This means literally closing distance. Literally taking a look. And matter of fact, you can take sometimes notice physically, even without asking someone, you physically notice what kind of separation is there. Does there tend to feel like, well, there's a little bit more spread, or does it feel like they're stepping closer or standing or moving more closely to you? That can tell you something about the presence of either one of you. And what my counsel is, what our suggestions are, is that just like you want to engage your senses, what this is doing by approaching someone physically, in other words, closing distance, closing physical separation. And obviously, this is not going to, I'm not suggesting anybody get crazy. I'm not suggesting anybody violate social tattoos. I'm just saying closing distance or approaching might be if I'm sitting and I've got a desk between the two of us. Well, I've got about, if I look at my office, the chair sitting in front of me is probably 8 feet away or seven feet away anyways. If you look at just measure my foot to the person sitting across, I want to close that distance to engage. And think about it. As someone that wants to influence or interact effectively, it's not only going to engage your sense, it's not only going to bring you into the present, who else is it going to bring into the present? It's going to bring them in. So to me, it's to physically close some space, create that kind of proximity. You want to close proximity as a way to make you more present, because if it's noticeably closer, It brings you into the moment. It brings you into your direct circuit, the direct circuit of your brain. First one is engage your senses. The second one is even engage that sixth sense. To me, we all talk about having a sixth sense, that it's not just sight and sound and touch, smell and taste and so on, that we have a sixth one. Well, generally, when you close distance, something starts resonating within you. Your brain starts to resonate with theirs. That is that sixth sense. Engage that one, too. That's my second tip. Number three is what we call audit your CPA. For those of you without the accounting background, and that's not what we're trying to allude to here, by CPA we mean continuous partial attention. All of us have it. All of us have what we call a continuous partial attention, meaning we've got a little radar that's always scanning our surroundings. We've got a little radar that's always scanning. We've dulled these to a great extent in the last 50, 60 years. But to scan that partial attention, scan your own or audit your own radar, is to find out what is in my partial attention. If I'm sitting across from someone, if I'm interacting with someone, it's to find out, all right, what is drawing my attention and what is drawing my awareness. I said being present is awareness and attention, and that attention is only focused awareness. Well, if I'm interacting with someone and when I audit my radar scan, and I find out that, you know what, I keep seeing X, Y, or Z off to the side here, and it's distracting me. Well, then I want to lessen the intensity of that noticing. I want to lessen the intensity of that awareness. What I want to do is increase my awareness, and therefore it gives me my attention on the person across from me, about what they look like, the movements they're making, the gestures they're making, increasing the intensity of what I'm listening to in terms of what they're saying, and not background noise. A lot of times we talk about the idea of things that you hear or see that seem to distract us. Well, you can ignore it, which is what we're talking about, is to scan your radar and see what am I focusing on, what am I kind of paying attention to that I don't want to, and then how do I increase the intensity of paying attention, of listening, of seeing someone else. That's what we mean by audit your continuous partial attention. Audit your continuous partial attention. Number four is an easy one. Tip number four is an easy one, and it goes back that it says befriend those you meet and know. And what this is people like to do business. People like to interact with people they like. They prefer to interact with, to do business with people they like. And the age-old adage that says, you know what, the favorite sound of every one of us is the sound of our own name. And I've both in writing when I'm sending emails or when I'm speaking, this one's kind of a twofer. If you use someone's name and use it more often than maybe you're accustomed to, it does two things. It's a twofer. First of all, it helps you remember their name. For those of you out there in terms of having a hard time being present or paying attention to people, you meet somebody and literally 10 seconds later, in the back of your mind, you're no longer paying attention to them, because in the back of your mind you're thinking, what was her name? What was his name? It's not an unusual occurrence, trust me. And the thinking is, the research shows that the best way to learn someone's name is to repeat it three times out loud and repeat it in your own head three times as a way, while you're looking at them, as a way to try and match that up. And the other side of it is, when you're using someone's name, when you say, thank you, Melissa. You're welcome, Melissa. Nice to see you again, Melissa. I'm imprinting it in my head, but they're hearing it too. Befriending those you know. Look for ways that you can do a favor for someone. Don't be afraid to ask an appropriate level favor of someone else. Because I'll tell you what, people, when they do favors for you, and again, let's not get crazy, but when someone does a favor for you, that tends to bring you not further away, but closer to them. Because they're in their own mind, it's tough for them to handle the dissonance of thinking, well, I'm doing favors for someone I don't like. Not only you doing favors for them as an act of friendship, but even asking a small favor is an act of friendship. Because by them doing it, it brings the two of you close together. So befriend the people that you meet and those you know, those you want to know. It's not a bad thing. It's not something that's unnecessary. Matter of fact, we are connected from birth to begin with. The process of empathy is one of... Empathy simply means, because you hear that word a lot these days, and empathy for me is it's the opposite, or it's a balance with ego. Ego is about me, empathy is about them. Being empathic, or someone can, when we share an empathic connection, simply means that someone believes I care and understand. that I understand about their perspective and I care. It doesn't say that I agree with it, but it says that I understand it and that I care. And in looking at something like that, befriending an individual, whether by word or deed or simple gesture, is again a twofer. It helps maintain the empathy connection that is there since birth anyways. I mean, think about it. What happens when a baby hears another one cry? It starts crying. We are hardwired from birth to connect to other people. And here what I'm saying in tip number four is simply do what you can to befriend another individual. How do you do that? Number five, breathe. When you think about this, it says breathe in, breathe out, breathe one count in, two counts out. The idea of being, this too is a twofer. Because when I breathe, I'm engaging one of my senses. I hear the breath. I can feel the air going in. If it's colder outside, if it's warmer outside, I can feel that temperature of that breath. A lot of times if I'm breathing in and there's a particular scent in the air, I can that pulls that in more strongly. So you're engaging by taking a moment for a deep breath, particularly when you're conversing. The twofer is, not only does it engage your senses, but it oxygenates you. It provides you oxygen. And think about it. When I'm interacting with people, when I'm teaching them, working with them, selling them, leading them, when I'm interacting with someone in any context, I'm using what organ? I'm using my brain. And what organ uses the most oxygen, bar none? Your brain. So what I'm doing is I'm also, not only am I engaging my senses as a way to do a better job and be more present with someone, but I'm engaging the most important organ. I'm engaging my brain. I'm oxygenating my brain. I'm enriching it. So that's the idea of number five, breathe. Let it oxygenate you. Let it hook you into your direct rather than narrative circuit. Especially because when you breathe, what aren't you doing? For the most part, if you take a pause, you're not speaking. you might even get a chance to hear something. Number five, breathing. Number six, cancel the meeting. Number six, cancel the meeting. Everybody complains about meetings and meetings, bloody meetings was a Monty Python or John Cleese piece that was done not too long ago, I don't know, 5 years, something like that. But the idea of cancel the meeting, we're all meetinged to death. Unless it is for reasons of expedience or budget of bringing everyone together, if it doesn't involve the things that we're finding is to do a better job of being present, is to quit going to places where there's a number of other people where you aren't interacting anyways. How many times do you go to meetings? How many times do you sit down for a staff infection, as they call them, a staff meeting? How many times do you sit down for a staff meeting? You know what's going to happen. You know that you're just going to sit here and fade in, fade out. Well, if it's within your power to do so, cancel the meeting unless it involves the interaction with those around you, unless it involves the relationship with those around you, or unless it involves the expedience or the economics of, you know what, we have to do it all at once. We have to make it a synchronous event. Something like, even for this webinar, this is something that there are many of you out there. I think we had 40 people that had signed up the last I looked a few days ago. When you have that many people, it's not a case of, gee, I'll have a personal phone call with 40 people. I can't do that. And the nice thing is, we're together right now, but I've had several that have called in and said, can we make sure we get the link to the recorded version of the webinar? Because I'm on Central Time, it's 2:00, I have a meeting I won't be able to attend. So that's, in that case, it doesn't even have to, it's a group function, and it doesn't even have to be synchronous. So when I look at cancel the meeting, is do your part in terms of doing a better job at being present, because think about what happens when we go to meeting after meeting and there, you know, when I look back at the end of the day and I said, that was a waste of a day. Well, when we have that, it gets me numb. I think that's the best word I can use. It numbs me to the interface with other human beings. So it makes it a norm in other words, I'm practicing sitting with other people and doing nothing and not being present with them. Because you know darn well we can pay just enough attention with about 2% of our brain while we're off on our narrative circuit somewhere. Even to the point where if somebody says, hey, Don, can you tell me what I just said? I can repeat it, even though I was thinking about other. Now, I hadn't thought about it. I couldn't consider it or learn from it, but I could probably regurgitate it. Number 6, cancel the meeting. Number 7, condition your physical being. I can't tell you the number of people that I work with in a coaching function, whether it's onboarding new leaders or new executives or helping people with positive behavioral change. Physical conditioning in the last 5 years has been a significant part of that process. Think about it. If you're not well, if you aren't managing your fuel and your fitness and your recovery, your rest, frankly, if one of that triad is out of whack, well, then I'm not going to be feeling very well. And how effective can I be with others if I'm not feeling very well? I know some speakers that when they do it, they'll work on a trampoline for 10, 15 minutes before they go on stage just to pump themselves up, to condition themselves to interact, to get the blood flowing, so even condition your physical being does mean proper rest, diet, and exercise. But it also means movement. I just stood up. And sometimes just by standing at my desk, by taking a walk if I want to consider something, or even standing at your desk when I am interacting with someone, particularly on the phone like just now, it can, by raising my perspective, it can also elevate my enthusiasm. It can elevate my energy. So conditioning your physical being, it includes the strategic and the tactical. That same idea of taking a walk with someone. If both of us are walking, if both of us have just, even at a 3 to 4 mile an hour pace, we're still doing a lot more than we are, physically we are moving a lot more than if we were sitting down together. Condition your physical being. Number 8, dedicate. Dedicate time and attention to those people that you're with. Dedicate the time and attention. And what I mean is, it's something that says, you know what, maybe I'm going to make an appointment and say, you know what, can we talk tomorrow at 10? Can we talk tomorrow at 10? I'm also going to say things like, this time is dedicated to you. I'll say, excuse me just a moment. Let me kill my phone, my smarter than iPhone. That's what I mean by dedicating it, verbally, specifically, personally dedicating interaction to someone else. What do I do when that happens? Think about it. What happens if I say, you know what, I'm going to dedicate this time to you, and I actually shut off my phones. I close my laptop on my desk. If it's at home, I turn the TV off, or we sit together and don't bring phones in. By verbally and formally dedicating it to someone, what that does is it kind of makes me accountable. It's an accountability function for me rather than, the only other alternative is to be a hypocrite. Yeah, this time is for you, and then ignore someone. Yeah, that even I can see the irony there. So it's to verbally dedicate it by making it overt rather than covert. Rather than there's too much that we do, and maybe that's the difference between overt and covert. It's too much we do that's covert. We do it as leaders. We do it at home. We do it. We sit there and think about our relation with someone that might be sitting across the room from us or might be in the same building. And we sit and think about it, and we try to get better. Rather than say, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to get better. Here, let's take that walk. I want to make sure that you and I get the most we can out of these 15, 20 minutes. That's an overt act. Let's get out of the covert interactions of thinking about it and what I'm going to do to someone, rather than bring it into the overt, bring it into the obvious, bring it into the conscious realm. And talk to someone, let them know what you're going to do. It increases the odds of you actually doing it. It's what it comes down to, of actually being present and listening to someone. I'm going to say, before I get to 9 and 10 here too, if you've got questions or want to make observations or want to, the thing, what I really want to get out of this for you, my wish for you in helping people with people, is that pick one or two things that you think, man, I can do this. I can put this into my repertoire. I hadn't thought of that. Grab a couple of those that you can attack post-webinar, that you can attack. And I'll give you a whole bunch of other things at the end to do as well. But I'd like you to consider that. And I'm going to do 9 and 10. And after 10, I'd like to, if we've got questions or comments or observations, give me a shout. Send it in on chat while we're hitting it, and we'll take a break at that point and do a couple of them. Tip number nine is disconnect. Disconnect from annoying technology. My question here is, how many of you never turn your phone off? How many of you have never turned your phone off or don't turn it off ever from the day you buy it to the day you turn it in for the next one a couple of years later? Or several years later, or for some people, only a few months later. How many of you never turn it off? I'm going to ask this. How many of you sleep with it? How many of you sleep with that phone? Or with that phone and an iPad? How many of you go to sleep watching, listening, interacting with that pad? Well, the idea of disconnect from annoying technology, and obviously we see people all the time where they seem to be, you'd be sitting at a restaurant and you'll see four or five people sitting around and everybody's checking their phone. Nobody's talking to each other. Or there's two that are talking to each other at the end and the other four are looking at that. Well, let me tell you this. First of all, yes, obviously we're not interacting. If I can't interact with you if I'm staring at my phone, and I work at this. And I fail. I know there's lots of people that don't work at it, and they fail miserably. The other thing I'd say, too, is it's a zero-sum game. By that I mean, the more time I spend, looking at the screen of my iPhone 5S, the less time I'm making eye contact with someone else. That's simple math. The more time eyes on screen, the less time eyes on eyes. Think about it for yourself. What can you do to disconnect from technology? What can you do to disconnect from technology? Okay. The last thing I'd like to make, maybe set yourself on that disconnect, is to maybe set yourself a protocol. Set yourself a new routine. By protocol, I mean, and you'll find out, what I mean by a protocol is the steps and process, an accepted code of conduct. And the example for that is I had a good friend that had leukemia. Well, they call it neutropenic protocol for people with compromised immune systems. What happens is you scrub up, you glove, you gown, you mask before you interact with that individual. That protocol is to prevent infection, to prevent that kind of passing of bacteria and virus. Well, think about it. Set a protocol for yourself. Is it something that I try to do is I try when I'm at home to plug it in by my chair. To just when I get in, plug it in by my chair so at least I don't have it in my hand or my pocket when I'm elsewhere in the house. And again, I say, even when I try, I'm guilty. But give yourself a protocol there that says, you know what, disconnect from annoying technology. And I always follow that up with a subtext of, it'll forgive you. It's not like we've got some robot that says, Don, you are ignoring me. Just go ahead and disconnect from it one way or another. And my best bet is set boundaries, set a protocol, set something that says, you know what, I'm going to turn it off at night. Doesn't matter what happens. You know, I'm going to turn it off when I go into a meeting. And the way you'll know that it's working is sometimes you'll find out at 10 o'clock the next morning, you'll look down and you say, oh, shoot, I've got a couple of messages here. Because why? I forgot to turn it back on again in the morning. The iPhone, I'm not sure about the Samsung, but the iPhone itself has that little button on the side. When you push it down and it's orange, it's not going to make a noise. It's not going to buzz. It's not going to vibrate. It's not going to do anything to get my attention. Matter of fact, even if we're in a meeting, we ask people, put your electronics on the floor. Put your electronics on the floor. And I've had people that, you know, that might have three in front of them, an iPad, a personal phone, the business, the corporation phone, and they're asking things like, they start to shake when I do. They start to shake. Yeah. Well, you know, that's number nine, and coming up on number 10, it kind of splits it down the middle for us, and I've got a couple of chat comments and questions coming in. Outstanding. We're going to hit those in just a second. I want to do the last one, formalize your communication practices, because it relates to one of the chat questions that came in. Number 10, formalize your communication practices says, you know what, just like we have a policy, I don't think there's anybody on this webinar that we'd go into your organization and light up a cigar. Probably not going to happen, right? I mean, there are formalized practices that says there's no smoking in the building. There's no, maybe in some airports these days there's a smoking room. Some places in other countries that I travel to, there are smoking within certain restaurants and bars and things like that. But there are formal practices that says, you know what? There's no smoking in here. There is, and it sets boundaries for people. And the thing I like about that is that you can have, you can set things aside. You can set those. And here I'm going to add, and I don't have the who had sent it in for me, the chat. It usually gives initials, but it says, I like the idea of canceling the meeting. What if I can't just cancel it? Is there a way to utilize this tip? Well, I think you take formalize your practices and cancel the meeting, and you put them together, and you can, the idea for me is then if you have to hold the meeting, well then what's the protocol? What is the protocol for the meeting? What are the boundaries for the meeting that says, you know what, we have to have this meeting. In the case of this, you might, I don't know about the person that sent this in. I'm not sure what business you're in or even what gender for that matter. When I look at the idea of canceling a meeting, what I would say here is that, you know what, if you're doing webinars like a lot, if you're doing conference calls like a lot of people are, well, then you have with most of these the same as we are today. We're recording this, and it'll be available. I believe they're usually available for a year with most of the services in that. So maybe on some of those webinars that you do when you hold that meeting is that there can be a recorded version of it, and then that kind of gets you down. If people don't show up, that's telling me something. It's telling me either the meeting isn't needed or I need to further structure some of the protocol. So when you ask about the idea of canceling a meeting and what if I can't, is there a way, other ways to utilize the tip? When you think about that, it's you can here. Let me give you another one for that tip. How do you bring down when I write? The individual says, "What else can I do for the cancel the meeting if I can't cancel the meeting?" Well, let me show you this. When I write something, my common process is, and I learned it from Stephen King, is to second draft equals first draft minus 10%. When you set a meeting, then figure out who you want showing up, and then go back and do a second draft on setting up that meeting and eliminate 10% of the meeting or 10% of the people. In other words, if I was going to have 10, tell you what, does X, Y, or Z, if I go back and I don't just say, well, you know, we need all the district managers there. We need all the regional managers or territory managers or account managers. We need them all there and we'll do that way I can get the message out to everybody. Well, is there a way that I can do that says, you know, that it isn't about safety or federal regulations, things like that, that I can say, you know what, I'm just going to have the territory managers in and they can pass this along to account managers. Or account managers can take, the other one I would suggest is official minutes of a meeting. Is someone keeps official minutes and those are published rather than a recording. Another one is in terms of protocol is what's the time limit? When I do peer coaching with people, when we set up peer coaching, the idea is that you have a 10-minute phone call. that we're in the process is where we do daily questions. But when you have a 10-minute phone call, how do you do that? That set the limit the people, limit the time, limit the media is a way to work around the I have to have the meeting. I've got one that says I'm a bit shy in terms of getting to know those people I meet. What are some tips for an introvert? There's two of them. I got two perfect ones for you. One of them is the question, because you like to listen. Introverts are listeners by nature. Ask people, say, tell me about. First one is to ask someone, tell me about, and then, in other words, if you have a hard time getting someone about to open up, even if it's your kids, if you, instead of saying, how was your day?
Fine.
And you know, as an introvert, it's like, okay, fine, and end of story. If you say, tell me about your day, and then I offer 7 seconds of silence, that brings them in. That's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to use the expression, would you like a suggestion? Would you like a suggestion? And by doing that, and you wait for them to say yes. And when they do say yes, there's two things that go on. They are listening. They are present with you now. So you've been able, there's two things you got to worry about. You're being present and they're being present. When you ask somebody, would you like a suggestion? Instead of just saying, well, you should ask, would you like a suggestion? And it does two things. It brings them into the present and it puts you on the spot to speak. And generally, once you get started, you're good. The last one, I'll give you a threefer on that one. The last one is ask somebody, where'd you grow up? And that one I learned, I think, from Jeffrey. The idea of not saying, well, where are you from? Well, I'm from Detroit. Where did you grow up? And you're asking specifically what specific location do they identify with where they grew up. It also it creates a lot of emotional hooks and anchors in there. When you ask somebody, to being an introvert, when you ask somebody, hey, where'd you grow up? Now you've just engaged them emotionally, because most of us, the place we grew up, it's where the heart is. Last question I have right now, and then we'll give you the other 10, is how do you activate the senses? Give a few more tips. Well, to me, one of those, in the moment, activating the senses are to oxygenate by taking breaths. Another is to change your perspective, which means to stand up, or if you're standing, sit down for a minute. It might be to take off, put on an article of clothing, because what it does is change creates heightened awareness. So some kind of change creates heightened awareness. And I would say the way you learn to engage your senses more, too, is take up cooking. Take up a new physical activity in which you have to move in a way that you've never learned to move, let alone the individuals that say, you know what, I'd love to learn to play guitar. And I said, what the heck are you waiting for? You're 62. and asking, so it's taking on, it's change and something new that gets us, that activates our senses. Why? Because we got to pay attention. Got to pay attention if we want to be able to do it. It brings us into a focus. And my others would be take some lessons at whatever, guitar, golf, speaking. Join a Toastmasters. And that would go, too, for you with the as an introvert, or the discomfort there is where you get comfortable with. You are forced into a role where you take on the uncomfortable. Take on the uncomfortable. So that goes across several of those questions. Let's go to 11. Number 11 is measure the quality of your interactions. And by whose perspective? Asking someone else. How did I do? For those of you, if you are shy, how did I do? Those of you that are asking about how was that meeting? Yeah, at your next meeting, you want to, you know, ask people if you want to, do it anonymously. Have everybody, if they want, everybody cover your eyes and put your head down and hold your hand up if we should have another meeting just like that, or hold your hand up if we should change it up quite a bit. Measure the quality of your interactions. My mentor, Marshall Goldsmith, says, if you can measure it, you can change it. I change that adage to say, if you measure it, you will change it. If you measure, how did I do today in being present with you? How did I do tonight, this evening, in being present with you? And if I hear, well, you had the TV on from 8 to 11. Well, that tells you something in itself. If you want the data, it will change you. Data will set you free. Mirror the image you want to see. If you want to, I mean, and this goes to physically mirroring, in other words, smile, if you want somebody to smile. But I don't know how many people that I hear that that give suggestions to other people to solve their conundrums that they ought to take on themselves. That idea of mirroring what you want to see. Because what happens is we have what are called, we have circuits in our brain that are kind of two-way. They react the same as if I'm doing something or if I'm observing someone doing it. So when I smile, my brain lights up the same way as when I see someone else smile. So if you want them to light up, do it first. You go first. It's kind of like, you know, you want to see a better world, you go first. Narrow the scope, number 13, of your intentions. Narrow the scope of your intentions, which means I'm a rule of three guy. It's the minimum number of data points I need to discard or establish a pattern. But it's also, I understand that we can multitask. And three is a limit, period, because I do know one thing, that the number of activities you can perform at a single time without degrading performance is one. So narrow the scope. And the other thing is do we multitask all the time? Do we have to in today's society? Absolutely. Do we do it when we're with other people? Absolutely, and we should not. So when I say narrow it, I mean quit multitasking when you're with someone else. Take a moment. Narrow the scope. Number 14, that's that one I mentioned earlier. Notice the impact you have. Notice the impact you have. And Warren Bennis, one of the gurus of management that's touched my life in one way or another, used to say, become a first-class noticer. And I'll tell you what, when you start noticing others, even if you're not listening, you're just watching to the physical proximity, whether you repel or attract, like I mentioned before, or if you're noticing the comments, even the casual remarks that people make about you or that you make about yourself, notice the impact you have. Number 15, personalize your conversation. We said this before within Befriend, but this is auditory. I want you to, when it says personalize your conversation, I want you to understand the power of your voice, not only with others, but with yourself. When someone, it's called positive affirmations. I know for a fact, and I've never been an early riser, but I'll tell you what, if you say out loud enough, I like to get up early, even if you're laughing at it because it's ridiculous. I don't like getting up early, but I say it because the point is that I had learned from Alan Zimmerman is, at least that's where I heard this quote, could be from another source, is that your brain is a data processor, not a lie detector. Your brain is a data processor, not a lie detector. And what that means is if you say enough times, I swear to God, if you say, I like to get up early, and if you say it out loud enough, you will start getting up at 6 o'clock, sometimes 5. I that's not a stretch of the truth. If you listen to your children and they're saying, I stink at this, I stink at that, even if you say, it to me, that's self-fulfilling prophecy. We are... Another one, we are born to win and programmed to fail. We're born to win, but if we continually repeat, I stink at this, and you know that's not the word that kids use. They use another one, but I stink at this. On the other hand, if you can get them, just say, look, I don't care if you believe me. I just want you to say, I'm awesome at math. I'm awesome at sports. I'm awesome at art. Whatever it is that is the case at hand, that has an impact. Personalize a conversation. The power of affirmation is huge. 16, reboot your interpersonal RAM, just like a computer, turning it off and starting again. Works for our, we have our prefrontal cortex, which is what holds the current interactions in memory. Sometimes it needs a reboot. It says, you know what, let's put this off till tomorrow. I'm done. How many times have you ever said, I'm done with this for now? And whether it's because you're angry or whether it's just because you're wore out, don't be afraid to reboot. Sometimes that takes in some of those things like walks or physical movement or exercise. Find one that works for you. Schedule regular, number 17, interaction, intentional daily interaction. Schedule it. Put it on a schedule. That's what we said about those meetings. Set a start time, a stop time. Even if it's for, I want to touch base with someone. Even if I just want to catch up. Say, hey, can we catch up at 1 o'clock on Thursday? If it doesn't, you know darn well people's outlook fills up. Number 18, study for its own sake. Understanding brings change. Understand. In other words, read about being present. Read about influencing others. Read about our brain. Matter of fact, I was just reading some really good stuff about guitar. I play music and have written a song or two myself. And it playing the guitar, playing music, piano, any instrument, engages more of your brain than any other activity. Throw in learning about it. Learning about it brings change. Charlie Tremendous Jones used to say, the only difference between who you are now and 5 years from now are the people that you meet and the books you read. What I'm saying here is read more books. It changes you. It changes you. 19. Number 19, substitute a new route or routine. In other words, I'll tell you what, how many times do you arrive at work and you go, God, I don't even remember getting here? Well, the idea is, take a different route. It wakes you up. If normally you play racquetball in the morning, if normally you play tennis in the morning, if normally you get a workout at the gym, do something different. If you're a racquetball person, then get a workout. Do circuit training. Do yoga. Take a new routine, even a healthy routine that you have. Change it up is where I'm going. I mentioned before, change creates presence. Change brings us into the present because it's not something we can do with half our brain asleep. Number 20, last one, silence the auditory interrupters. You feel that silence? Silence the auditory interrupters. If you have your phones with, hey, I've got this ringtone for this person, this ringtone. So every time I hear a ringtone, I'm trying to figure who that is. I've got this sound for text. I've got this sound for emails. I've got this sound for, wow. And matter of fact, if I'm in somewhere where there's noise from other parts, we can always say, you know, you can try to ignore it, but you can't not hear it. You can't unhear it. You can't unsay it. It's not only silence some of those interrupters, but sometimes it's my own mouth. I never got into trouble by not saying something. What it comes down to. You've got a whole bunch of those that are tips and techniques for you. And I would say, too, in terms of these 20 strategies, you can contact me, don@donbrown.org, about how we work with other people, with other client organizations, but if you've got questions, you can go to donbrown.org and opt in up on the upper right, and it'll send you a printout of these 20 tips with a little bit of verbiage, a little two or three sentences with each one. Go ahead and opt in and get a copy of it. Happy to have you do that. There's another question I want to talk to you about, this idea of learn to be present. Remember I said we were going to talk about so what, now what? So what means, why is it important? Why is learning to be present important? Why is it important to you? Because again, it's not about, to me, I can look at it statistically and through research, we know that people are healthier, less depression, less anger, less hostility, less physical ailments if they can do a better job of being present with others. They are more likable, more trustable if they are better able to do that. To me, that's pretty important. As a leader, as a salesperson, service provider, a parent, I can have a more effective impact on others. That's why it's important, if I can do a better job of being present. I can get being effective as an influencer, as a leader, is other people do what I need them to do and they feel good about it. Learning to be present is a foundational competency for that. And then the other thing I'd say, all right, taking that competency and now what? What are you going to do about it? We had some tips and techniques. Let me give you an idea, something that you might want to think about. On Udemy.com is what's called the Leader's Protocol. And in that, it's a self-paced, a web-based program that we use that uses 35 video lessons, testing. It lets you target your influence. It learns to follow it helps you learn to follow protocol. It helps you find the energy to lead, and is founded on this idea of learning to be present. This is a leader's protocol. When you think about the rules of engagement for influencing others in this crazy, no normal world, learning to be present, learning to talk to the right people, in other words, to target my influence, learning to follow protocol, setting boundaries, setting what the conduct should be, finding the energy to lead in a world where I'm just being solicited to death. So if you want to know something about what do I do about it, what do I do about this, go to udemy.com. Matter of fact, go to the Leaders Protocol. It's self-paced. You've got access for life. It's $149. You can probably expense it with your organization. It also includes, we're launching this right now, it includes a coaching call with me. We're doing a group coaching, and even if you don't want to make it, send your questions in. If you have questions about people that you manage, that you work with, this is a now what for you. Because I tell you what, to be more effective at leading others, you don't have to do much, but you have to do something. You've got to do something. So if you'd like to, go on over to that. You can actually put in tinyurl.com, and then it's just OOAV9FL. And what I would do is contact, matter of fact, send an email, and we'll get you a coupon code that gets you the discount price. Send it to kelly@donbrown.org, K-E-L-L-Y, @donbrown.org, or send it to me, don@donbrown.org. Matter of fact, I'm being told now that the coupon code itself is Don Brown. You put in the coupon code Don Brown. If you go to Udemy, put in the coupon code Don Brown, D-O-N-B-R-O-W-N, and you get that not only the $149 price, which is $50 off what it normally is, but you get the coaching call, you get personal questions answered, and you get personal support here, and you get self-paced access for life. You can use it for as long as you like. It's been fun being present with you today. And if some of you have, if you're still on where you want to leave other questions, or if you want to leave a request for contact right now to ask me a question or to ask about some of the things we do, go ahead and leave it on the chat here. We'll leave the meeting open for a couple more minutes. If you have any other questions or comments, I'd love to hear it. It's been fun being present with you, and I hope you've enjoyed the hour. It goes awful quick. So does life. Learn to be present for it. Thank you. Bless you. For those of you that have asked a couple of questions here post-webinar, thank you very much, and we will get answers to you personally. For anybody else, if you want to leave questions, if you want to leave requests, by all means, go ahead and if you want, you can chat it in. You can chat in your email and we'll respond to it. Even if you just let us know who it is, we've got your email in the sign up. And if you want to go to Udemy yourself, it's the Leaders Protocol, and the coupon code is Don Brown. And enjoy the holiday season, being present with those that you care for.